Mrs. Peel.
Sorry, Steed, I'm needed elsewhere. I had an anonymous phone call, a man. I didn't recognize the voice. Said it was a matter of life and death.
This voice, what did it sound like?
Hear it for yourself.
It's me, the doctor.
I'm phoning you. I mean, it's all still to happen for me. It's coming. Oh, it's coming.
It's not just a matter of the same country, sir. We're not even in the same universe.
Hello and welcome to Wibbly Wobbly Dicey Wicey, Another Universe, where we take characters from other science fiction and fantasy universes and see how they'll do and how they fit into who. With me today is the grizzled veteran, possibly by this stage, Michael Nixon of the Game of Rassilon fame.
I'm so old!
You've aged significantly since doing this. Mind you, so have I, probably for different reasons.
Yeah, talking to me can be very withering, so sorry about that.
Again, this character, your idea. So it's your fault if it goes wrong. Who are we covering today, please, Michael?
Oh, we are covering, in a follow-up to John Steed last time, we are covering the exquisite Mrs. Emma Peel, not the first sidekick of John Steed. I would argue not necessarily a sidekick, but correcting myself just there. But certainly the most well-known, I think, at least over on American shores. I don't want to speak for our former owners.
It's probably true here. I think Mrs. Emma Peel was certainly the most famous of his equal partners.
Yes. Equal partners. I like that. That's much better. We got to correct earlier me. Thank you. But yeah, I think she's got that same sort of vibe as like Steed and Peel are like the Tom Baker doctor to Doctor Who. Like they're when people think of the Avengers, the British Avengers, they think of Steed and Peel.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely true in this country as well. Before we start, a tidbit of information. Emma Peel, Diana Rigg, the late great Diana Rigg, who played at Mrs. Emma Peel, she came on board in season 3 of the Avengers. Season 3, season 4. And the previous... I'm surprised we haven't used the word companion, considering this is a Doctor Who podcast. But the previous partner to John Steed was played by Honor Blackman, who left the Avengers to film Goldfinger, the James Bond film. And Diana Rigg, in part, left the Avengers when she did to film On Her Majesty's Secret Service, the Bond film. So clearly a bit of headhunting going on there.
That's very cool.
Yeah, so let's start off with...
And they're both fantastic in their respective Bond films. Sorry to interrupt.
No, you're absolutely right. They are.
They're like the high points of the Bond films.
Definitely my favorite Bond.
And those two are top of the pops as far as I'm concerned. I'm very happy. On Her Majesty's Secret Service, I think, has had a really recent, you know, redemptive reading revival kind of movement. Because for a while it was like the black sheep of the James Bonds, but it's very good. It's actually a very good film.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the actual narrative, the story, through story is very good. I think the only reason it got the negative press is purely because of the shenanigans of George Lazenby, really.
Yeah, poor George Lazenby. He just couldn't get a break.
Yeah, absolutely. Plucked from obscurity, lied on his CV that he'd had any acting experience, got dropped into a major blockbuster and then just couldn't be bothered.
Yeah, there's a great doc about him. Is it Becoming Bond
something like that? Yeah, it's fantastic.
He's exquisite. I wish they would just do like some grizzled retired Bond comes out of retirement and it's George Lazenby of all people movie. I think it would be that would be so fun.
And most possibly a future Another Universe segment. We could do James Bond. I think that would work quite well.
Yeah, specifically the George Lazenby James Bond. Yes.
Very specifically.
Great in a kilt. Is meta aware. Speaks to camera on more than one occasion. Very cool version of the character.
So back to Mrs. Emma Peel. Do you want to kick us off with her background so people have got an idea of who she is and what she does?
Yes, of course. Let's dig into this exquisite history that you have assembled. Emma Peel, nay Knight, is the daughter of industrialist Sir John Knight and was a super spy who worked along John Steed from 1965 to 1967 until her husband, Peter Peel, surprisingly reappeared. That's a lot of P's. That was good. I like a... was that alliteration? Anyway. She's a heroine, she is rarely defeated in fights, and she is capable of rescuing Steed if he is in trouble. As you stated earlier, Ryan, she's an equal partner. She is a master of the martial arts and a formidable fencer. A certified genius, she specializes in chemistry and other sciences. She's often seen in episodes engaging in artistic hobbies and has success in industry at the helm of the company of her late father, Sir John Knight, which is a great name. Her husband, Peter Peel, was a pilot whose plane disappeared over the Amazonian forest. Are you testing me with these peas? He was presumed dead for many years, and Peel went on to work with Steed. She drove a convertible Lotus Elan at high speeds and convincingly portrayed any series of undercover roles, from nurse to nanny. Her favorite guise was that of a woman's magazine reporter trying to interview big business tycoons and rich playboys. Ah, she and Sarah Jane could bump heads. That'd be
really
fun.
Yeah, we'll definitely come on to that, because I think that'd be a great team up. Interesting, just as a sort of historical side note, obviously, she's very much a woman of the 60s, beginnings of women's lib. She was very much an icon of that. But when you look at who she had to go under in disguise as, a woman's magazine reporter, and once or twice she was a teacher, there wasn't a lot they could really... She was just very good at it, but there weren't a lot of jobs she could actually pretend to go undercover as a woman. She had to sort of take a step back from her own sort of empowered self.
Yeah, she had to hide within the wretched system to take it apart. Wait, so, my politics are showing. Anywho, it's worth noting, I think, for folks who don't, you know who are listening, like, she got her name because it was Man Appeal. M Appeal is like the reason M Appeal is named M Appeal, is like a bunch of dudes in suits were like, this show needs more M Appeal. And they were like, ah, ha, ha, we'll add literally a character named M Appeal, which is like, it's just so transparent. But I think Diana Rigg is able to transcend that because she's terrific. She was an amazing force and really imbued the character with something.
She made the character an icon, and she I hate to say this, but she subverted the position that she was given completely. She took an element of sexiness almost kind of away from men, because there's a thing that Emma Peel does that's not masculine. She sort of feminized a certain kind of action hero, and after that, men couldn't really touch it. She made it, you know, a sort of female power that she had. It was fantastic.
Yeah, the thing I like a lot about the Steed and Peel dynamic is it captures something that I don't think any American television show has ever been comfortable with doing, which is there's this guy and there's this girl, and they are friends, and they work together, and they do not sleep together. And it's just like, well, I can't, wait, what? What's going on? Like, if you walk into any American writer's room and pitch that to them, like, their heads would all explode, like the end of Kingsman, the first Kingsman. Like, it would just be like a confetti coming out of their heads, you know? And there was this sort of playful flirtiness between them, but it was always the thing of her being Mrs. Emma Peel and you know, Sir Honorable, the Honorable John Steed. It was like there was this dynamic of friendship, like actual friendship between them, that is very cool to watch, even today.
Yeah, these days, if you did have them just be friends, it feels like they would turn it into a will they won't they, and the only reason they wouldn't in the end is because one of them would turn out to be gay or something like that, you know.
Yeah.
And it would be
yeah. Steed's dating his Taylor, something like that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But having said that, regarding the sort of how to play these characters, as loyal listeners will know, we've already covered John Steed, the other half of this duo in the British version of the Avengers. But just for as a footnote, if you do have someone playing both of them, Peel's verbal interactions with Steed ranged from sort of witty banter to very thinly disguised innuendo. And as you were talking about the idea of them not having a sexual relationship or having a sexual relationship, Patrick McNee actually always played it as though they went to bed on a very regular basis, just not on screen. In between episodes, they were, you know, having the intercourse. Whereas Diana Rigg played it as though they really enjoyed the flirtation, but it never went anywhere. And on top of this, Brian Clemens, the writer, said that he wrote them with the idea that they had an affair before Emma's first appearance in the series. So they were like old flames. So you've got three different angles there, but on screen, it never went too far. It kept the sort of like the heart and soul of the relationship, which was they clearly really like each other and respect each other. And I think it's fair to say they love each other as well, but just not necessarily in that way.
Yeah, I would say I certainly subscribe to the Diana Rigg theory of the relationship.
That's what I always thought as well, yeah, absolutely.
Very much opposed to the Patrick McNee theory of the relationship. But yeah, of course Patrick McNee would say that. You know, come on.
Yeah, I mean, I think, to be honest, it helped with their on-screen chemistry that they came at it from those two different angles. I think, I mean, whilst we're not going to sort of dissect, you know, male-female gender politics from the 60s in this podcast, I think it does say something about them.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, there is... I like that there's that room for interpretation even amongst the people who were making it.
Yeah, and the writing, the critical thing is the writing of it means nothing was confirmed on screen. So all three of those things could be canon. It's up to you how you want to play it.
Yeah, if in your game you want to have them run off together and steal Bessie, I'm fine with that. That'd be fun.
So, and just quickly, ordinarily we do this at the other end, but it's just one tiny little footnote. There is a sort of beta canon connection to Doctor Who through the Avengers, technically. In 1991's Doctor Who Monthly issue 173, in a Captain Britain story, they show Captain Britain about to hit someone who is very clearly John Steed, and then Emma Peel comes in and shows up behind him to sort of stop him, which I think is a nice touch. I like that, again, really nice touch and very forward thinking that she saves him, not the other way around.
Yeah, I love that. And also, I didn't know... Captain Britain showed up in Doctor Who Monthly. That is very cool. Yeah. I love that character.
Yeah, me too.
The Alan Moore stuff is incredible.
Actually, given that your alter ego is Wonder Woman, as established a couple of episodes ago, Michael, would you like to read the Wonder Woman fact that we have?
Look, I'm great doing a twirl. What can I say? The late 1960s revamp of Wonder Woman by Mike Sikowski is a mod-dressing, karate-chopping, and yet non-superpowered sort of feminist icon is very clearly directly modeled on Mrs. Peel, too. The cat suits, the sort of fashion wear. It's very Emma Peel-y. I think it was a really wrong-headed revamp of Wonder Woman, but Emma Peel rules, so I can see why they did it.
Yeah, you can't have too much Mrs. Emma Peel.
Yeah, she's great. And there was a very cool run of Wonder Woman in, I think, the sort of mid-late 2000s, where they brought back the kind of spy Diana Prince identity and really played up the Diana Rigg catsuit.
Yes.
Wonder Woman got this cool, like, white catsuit with the zipper kind of outfit for spy stuff.
It was just after Infinite Crisis. That was the spur to it, yeah.
That's right. That's, yes. Yeah, because her secret identity was as a super spy, which I think is a very funny way of, I don't know.
Her secret identity is an identity that should be secret, but is actually public facing. That's very wibbly wobbly.
It's such a cool way of doing that. Yeah. She is like a superhero with a more secret identity. That's cool.
So, as always, we'll now go through the stats and skills and traits and what have you, and then where she might fit in the Hooniverse. Mike, do you want to start us off with awareness?
Yeah, I'll jump right in. We start off with an awareness of 4, which is we've talked about quite a few times these last few episodes, is sort of human, like peak human. This would put you on the level of the 11th Doctor or Captain Jack. Obviously, as a spy, she's very aware. She knows what she's looking for. She's got tactical awareness and senses. And obviously, as a skilled high-speed driver, like you have to be very aware of your surroundings. So I think that perfectly works.
Now, of course, we have developed what we call the Brigadier baseline for human characters, which is 4s across the board, as the Brigadier has. So we're...
Yeah, specifically in the unit era.
Yes. And again, Mrs. Emma Peel does follow the Brigadier baseline quite closely, because we've got a coordination of 4 coming up. She's very well coordinated. She's not superhuman, but she's very lithe and agile, if it's fair to say. And again, this puts her on the level of the 10th Doctor and Captain Jack.
Yes, and staying with that Brigadier baseline, she's got an ingenuity of 4, which is, again, like more ingenuous, ingenious than the average person. But it puts her on the level of General Stahl or the Supreme Dalek, you know, sort of military commanders with that kind of capacity to improvise as necessary.
She can take control of a situation quite
well. Oh, certainly, yes. But via a quip or a kick or, I don't know, throwing something. She's always pretty good at throwing something.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. She's an all-rounder at getting your attention. Next, we have Presence, which is six, which is, although not the Brigadier baseline, this is equal to the Brigadier when he was retired. And if you remember the Brigadier in Battlefield, the gravitas that he had was...
Anytime that guy exited a door, there was a little music cue. He's a figure, you know?
Yeah, and Emma Peel was very much that.
Absolutely. And similarly with a resolve of six, that puts her on the level of the Third Doctor or Davros or the retired Brigadier. If I remember right, I think this puts her a point ahead of Steed too, which I think is perfect. She's got like unbreakable resolve. You can't, she has a superhuman sort of character of resolve to her. You can't flap her. She's unflappable.
And when you think about it, you've got to take into account she was risking her life for Queen and country and saving the world at the same time as she was mourning her husband, because, you know, she still refers to herself as Mrs. Emma Peel. So this is not someone who's moved on. That's still with her. So
she's, yeah, and she's in charge of the company of her late father too. I mean, she's surrounded by death, not just in the spy business.
Yeah.
So she's very resolute.
Yeah. Interestingly, actually, as a sort of side note, she is the last of John Steed's equal partners who wasn't a spy. She was a I can't remember what it was they referred to them as, like enthusiastic amateur or highly skilled amateur. After Mrs. Emma Peel, from Tara King onwards, they were all actual spies. So Mrs. Emma Peel hasn't even gone to, you know, spy school. So her resolve is...
She's just very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
And
she's like a Lady Batman.
Oh, can you imagine if Diana Rigg, if the films had been around, she would have been a sublime Batgirl or Batwoman or whichever of the female Bat characters. She would have just been...
She'd have been a great Catwoman.
She would have been a great Catwoman, actually. I was thinking...
If they could have stolen her for the 66 show, that would have been mind-blowing.
That would have been amazing.
And I love all the various Catwomen of that show, too. I think they all approached it in very cool ways, particularly Eartha Kitt, obviously. Yeah. But, yeah, you could pretty much just throw a headband on Diana Rigg and have her walk across the set, which would also include a transatlantic flight. But, you know, whatever. Yeah,
well, you know, she's a jet setter. And lastly, we've got strength of four, which is equal to the Third Doctor. Strength was never her thing. She knew where to hit you rather than how hard, I think would be fair to say. Because Mrs. Emma Peel, she's a fantastic fighter, but she's not a large woman, is she? She's a very... I'm trying to sound like a pervert, but she's a very slinky woman. She's very, very familiar.
Yeah, but I think it's cool that you related her specifically to the Third Doctor, because I relate their fighting styles and that sort of Aikido, using your weight against you, like outclassing the opponent kind of fighting thing. And four puts her on the Brigadier baseline similarly. So it's not like she's not some weak-willed woman, as Queen Elizabeth would say. She's, she can take a punch and give one.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. We'll just run through the sort of other things. Obviously she's a human from Earth. She's from the 20th century. So we've given her tech level of five, which is appropriate for her era, even though she sort of dealt in things that are slightly fantastical, nothing that sort of broke that. And we've given her 12 story points. She's not overpowered. She's a very useful character to drop in.
Yeah. I think tech level of five is what edges you into sort of 21st century stuff.
Just about.
Which makes... Yeah, and that makes sense even though she's set in the 60s, because they were doing, like we talked about last time, like cybernauts and super science and laser beams and all kinds of weird sci-fi contrivances. Yeah. So adding that extra little edge, I think, is how you, how you accommodate that.
Yeah, I always think of her as like being... I always think of her as like being space age 60s rather than the 60s that regular people lived in.
Yes. Yeah. The atomic 60s, definitely.
Oh, yeah. The atomic 60s. That's a better way of putting it. Yeah. She's very much from the atomic 60s. Which brings us on to skills. Do you want to kick us off?
Yes, I will. We start with an athletics of three, which, as we've noted with Mrs. Peel being slinky and athletic, she clearly meets the three. I think that'll give you a good boost on jumping and kicking and flipping and all the various things you would need to play Mrs. Peel.
And we've come on to a convince of four. Again, similarly to John Steed, she's very persuasive. And whilst she didn't outright, I don't think, outright sort of use this as like her feminine wiles to outright seduce anyone. She was just naturally very charming. You just naturally gravitated towards her. And if she did, you know, shine her light on you, as it were, you would be like putty in her hands. So that's why she's got such a high convince.
Yeah, presence and convince are kind of the bread and butter of the game. So nobody's going to question her credentials or any of that stuff. It'll be easy to get into a space and ingratiate yourself into that space, which is exactly what Emma Peel was good at.
Yeah, no psychic paper for her.
Exactly. Yeah, she has an actual printed credential that she has to have people believe, and it always works. You know, I don't, you know, think she ever really had a problem with that. Proposing as a reporter now would be basically impossible. Posing as a reporter then, still very, very difficult. There were like 4 newspapers, you know?
Mm.
Anyway, I'm rambling about convince. With a craft of 1, it's not a massively impressive crafting skill, but she can assemble... I imagine she's got some MacGyver-like ability. If there's a bunch of things in a room, she can cobble something together.
Yeah, I mean, remember, she didn't actually have spy training, so it's all improv and her own basic knowledge, which is pretty high, so she doesn't need a high craft skill on top of that.
However, like a fighting of 3 is definitely her field. She knows how to fight. Again, I think I've mentioned kicking and punching quite a few times because she's very good at them. A good old karate chop is a solid M appeal move. You put down an area of expertise in, I apologize right
just
now.
Just unarmed combat. UA.
Unarmed. UA. I apologize. I didn't know the abbreviation there. But exactly, unarmed combat is so clearly her forte.
Because she never actually sort of declares that she's using karate or judo or anything like that. She has a sort of a melange of different fighting styles that are her unique.
Yeah, she's got a real, the Kurgan white guy karate omni style.
Yeah, exactly. And again, that brings us on to knowledge of 3. She is genuinely very smart. And she
I think she's very well read.
And we've given her an air of expertise in intelligence. And that's basically just partly just to, so she can keep up with other spies without being a spy. And also she's an incredibly quick study. She knows things, she figures things out, and she looks things up extremely well. So that's why she's got the AOE of intelligence.
Yes, she's got a marksman of 2. I don't think she's like the greatest sniper on the planet, but if she had to pull it off, she could. If she had to steal Steed's sword, I don't know how that would go. But marksman of 2, she's if I remember right, she was well acquainted with a pistol.
Yeah, she was a pistol person, so always close in. So she was very rarely doing anything long range.
Although I feel like Emma Peel with a sniper rifle would be a very cool image. Should get on that, gamers. I'll keep going. Next up, we gave her a medicine of 1, which is, again, sort of basic medical knowledge. She doesn't have, as we've noted, you know, specific medical training, but I think she knows how to take care of a wound. She knows her way around. She's so broadly informed about so many things. I feel like she could bandage somebody up.
Yeah, exactly. And that neatly brings us on to science of 3. Again, she's got, you know, good knowledge of science, very good knowledge of science. She runs a business. Her husband was an explorer, so I would imagine she has picked up quite a bit just from her everyday life. And obviously working for the ministry, she's learnt more and more. But like I said, she's got a voracious intelligence, so she's picked things up. And so science of 3 seems very, very feasible, especially some of the things she does in the show with science.
Yeah, and while she's not, you know, an intelligence person or a spy per se, her subterfuge of 2 is, I think, she's like you said, the amateur enthusiast. She knows what she's doing. She can sneak into the situations. She can trick people. If you're not relying on specifically like a presence and convince, something involving subterfuge, you'll still be well off with a 2.
Yeah, I mean, and she can disguise herself as a journalist as well. So obviously, that comes into that as well. We've got survival of 2. Again, basic field skills. She knows how to get by in rough situations. And the Avengers is never really about them roughing it particularly. But, you know, she knows how to deal with things. Again, not to sort of make this part of a husband's skill set, but husband was over the Amazonian forest when he disappeared, which means there's a fairly good chance you know, they have developed some kind of survival skill set just by osmosis of what they do for a living. So
yeah, general explorer, you need to know how to, you know, survive. Yes, with a tech of 2, again, this is sort of generally skilled at tech. She knows her way around technology, but I you know, planes, trains, automobiles, all that sort of stuff. That falls more into transport, which she has a 3 in. Yes, yeah, she's sort of, again, sort of broadly skilled in the technology of her time and the transport of her time. I don't imagine Emma Peel would have too much problem flying a plane.
Yeah, and she does drive the car in the show fairly often as well and drives it well. So
yeah, she takes over for Peter when he needs a nap, which clearly he needed on that trip to the Amazon. I don't know.
Evidently. Very long
take
nap.
A stop, man.
Two-year nap. And that brings us on to traits. Well, the first one just is attractive. And if you don't know why she's got that, then you know.
She's a lead character on a TV show. I mean, Steed's got it.
Yeah.
Most of the doctors have it. They're attractive.
And she's Diana Rigg, so, you know.
Yeah, it'd be rude to not. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
For adversary, we've given her various. This covers sort of the various foes of the Avengers, from evil intelligence organizations to the cybernauts to, I don't know, what have you.
Yeah, there were many and varied over the 2-3 year period they were together. So brave, obviously, she's one way or another. She's a spy risking her life every week. She's definitely brave.
Charming, as we've said, she's absolutely charming. Again, Steed has this as well. I think it's a sort of a mandatory skill of the Avengers to be just too charming. So darn charming. Like it's they're very
charming,
winsome people. Yeah, I was trying to find another word, which is why I went with winsome. But yeah, they're very
winsome.
I don't know. Yeah, it's easy to convince you that they're your pals. They're on your side, even when they're like stealing the files behind your back. But, you know?
Yeah, they're supremely gregarious in a bizarrely professional way.
Yeah, just watch the opening titles of the Steed and Peel years and tell me they aren't charming, and I'll have you committed. I don't know what to do.
Now the next one is a slightly strange one in some ways. Dark Secret Husband. Now, it's not really a secret to anyone who's relevant in the show, but it's a driving force for her. Her husband is missing in the Amazonian forest, believed dead. She still calls herself Mrs. Emma Peel. So, as I said earlier, she's still hanging on to that. So it's a dark secret to the outside world. It's not a dark secret to anyone she works with. So you sort of have to play it more as a motivational factor rather than a... I mean, she hasn't got PTSD over it or anything like that. But it drives her on.
Yeah, and also reading the phrase "dark secret husband" in the traits thing is very funny. I really enjoy it. The next trait we gave her was friends, Steed, which obviously it's the two of them are beyond being partners or work colleagues. They are clearly friends. There is a friendship between them. Whichever one of the actors or writers you are believing, the extent of that friendship. It's a deep one. It's a meaningful friendship between the two of them.
Yeah, and the funny thing is, if you go back and watch the show, they've got such instant chemistry. It weirdly, just as a sort of side note, it lends credence to Brian Clemens' theory, the writer who said that they had an affair before Emma's first appearance in the series and before she was married, I presume, because they just hit it off so quickly and the banter is just instantaneously effortless. So, yeah, like you said, it's... Friendship almost doesn't cover it in many ways.
The next trait I would say is indomitable. She's clearly an indomitable person. I'll just keep saying indomitable if you don't stop.
It's quite a self-evident trait, considering her lifestyle, how she conducts herself, and the fact that indomitable really does say what it does on the tin. She's indomitable.
Yeah, she's always going to have another quip. Like, she's an endless reservoir. Like, she's just not... She's, you know... She's not breakable. She's indomitable. She cannot be domitable. Anyway, next trap is Lucky, which will be very handy. The Avengers tend to get their way out of scrapes with charm and elan. So you're not going to have to deal with a lot of snake eyes playing the game, which is very handy.
The next one, obligation to the ministry. Again, this one's not a major one because she's not a career spy. But yeah, she clearly has an obligation to the sort of organisation she works for. I don't know, is she freelance? Is she technically self-employed? Is she work for hire? I'm not really sure, but...
They got her under California's Prop 22. She's an independent contractor forever.
So they don't have to pay her. They don't have to pay her health benefits. They just, you know.
No health, no dent, none of that. No, she's yeah, but she gets to keep some of her money. I guess
just like working for the WWE as a wrestler.
It's Uber spy. That's what the ministry is. It turns out it's just a big. It's a big Lyft scam.
Next we've got quick reflexes. Again, doesn't really need explaining. We've said about how she operates, how she fights, how she reacts to things, that she could be Catwoman. So quick reflexes, kind of self-explanatory.
Yes. Sharpshooter as well. I think, you know, she's not, like we had said, not the sniper type, but good with a pistol. She's, again, watch the opening title sequence and tell me she's not a good shot.
Yeah. I mean, the rare occasion she might use something that isn't a pistol, She has never missed in the show that I can recall ever. So we gave her a sharpshooter because I think it's one of those skills that she rarely unfurls, but she she's got it.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I think if she missed, she meant to do it. That's the level of shooter we're dealing with. And then the last trait is tough. If it's not clear from our conversation about Mrs. Emma Peel already, she is tough. She is, like I've said a few times, she's just unbreakable. You can't break her. You can't flap her. She can't be sort of... I just don't remember her being too terribly off guard ever. She's always on it. And that I think that's part of that toughness.
She can't be flapped or domitilized.
Domitabled.
Yeah. And I mean, I think... obviously, this is a choice and a perspective thing. But I think of the two, between John Steed and Emma Peel, I think she is the... Not the heavy, but she's the toughest one. She's the strong person, as it were.
Yeah, often she's the brains and the brawn. It's there's so much fun in the show of you could really play up like what is Steed there for? You know, Emma Peel is always like he's the one who gets into trouble and she's the one who gets them out of it.
There are plenty of what I call Kato moments, which if you've ever seen Green Hornet, Bruce Lee played Kato and. Obviously, he had to hold back a lot, but he could wipe the floor with everybody in the whole room, and Green Hornet could just sort of stand there going, "Oh yeah, what am I here for again?" And there were moments like that in the Avengers. On occasion, they did a very good job of balancing between the two, but sometimes Emma Peel would just be like, "Well, Mrs. Emma Peel doesn't really have any gadgets per se, so we've not really started up any gadgets for her. She uses a pistol sometimes, but that's a fairly standard one. She didn't have her own bespoke." You know, diamond encrusted ivory handle pistol or anything la-di-da like that. That was part of her strength as a character, that she was very, not one of the boys, but she could use anything to achieve the effect she wanted. So there's no gadgets here, which I think brings us on to the next section, which is how does she fit in the Hooniverse? Do you want to start with Unit and Torchwood like we did with John Steed, or do you want to go through the Doctors first and come to Unit and Torchwood at the end?
I think Unit and Torchwood at the start would be a good idea. I have a very weird Torchwood pitch that we'll get to. Unit, I think, is relatively self-evident, as with Steed. There's a confluence of the great spying duos or something like that, and everybody has to work together.
There's also...
I imagine a great 70s crisis.
You like the idea, I've noticed a running theme, that you like the idea of doing Crisis on Infinite spies and various things for a lot of these. I like it. I mean, my sort of pitch for Unit would be, obviously, she slots right into the 70s. You know, I mean, I think because when she was in the Avengers, she was in the late 60s, so she wouldn't be appreciably older when Pertwee, when the Third Doctor comes along. So she fits seamlessly into the Unit family. She's also gone undercover as a teacher, and the Brigadier pretended to retire as a maths teacher. So you've got a connection there if you want to set them in a different time period, which brings her in, you know, into the Fifth Doctor's era as well. If you want to get sort of somewhat incestuous, you could say that she's friends with Doris, the Brigadier's wife, and knew her from way back. I can't remember what Doris did for a living, actually.
I don't know if they say.
I don't know if they ever did, but you could tell from Doris's accent when she is on the show that she's clearly from a quite well-to-do family, which means she could have easily known the Knights or the Peels. And also, let's be honest, her husband disappeared over the Amazonian forest. Just spoiler alert, they do find him. That's why she leaves the show. She goes back with her husband. But the fact that her husband explores the Amazonian forest, well, one, we don't know what Peter Peel's job was. He could be UNIT for all we know. And two, if he's exploring the Amazonian forest, Silurians, it's an easy way of segueing them in. Any kind of creature like that could have been in the Amazonian forest. And so you've got a nice, easy link there for UNIT on multiple levels. And I quite like the idea even of the Brigadier's family, of the Stuarts being friends with the Peels or the Knights. You know, it just seems like a sort of a dynastic thing going on there, that possibly they would know each other through that.
Yeah, definitely. They're again, like, same club kind of people.
Exactly. And you know that, like, yeah, Mike Yates or at least one of the UNIT men would have flirted with her shamelessly. I mean, you know it.
Yes. There'd be a crowd of all the UNIT boys just, like, keeping her champagne filled.
Plus, if you want to do, and I know you don't like doing prequels, but there's a very easy one of Joe Grant. Well, actually, with a science background, you can even do Liz Shaw. But Mrs. Emma Peel taught Joe Grant how to be a UNIT agent.
Ooh, quite a nice scene. I like that. Yeah, Emma Peel as UNIT's training person would be very funny.
They've got like a Black Widow Red Room, but benevolent, and it's Mrs. Emma Peel is the teacher.
Yeah, there's Mrs. Peel's tea room, and she teaches you how to do chops. Like,
yeah,
the key to good spy work is a good karate chop. You just got to really chop them.
But yeah, so what's your unusual pitch for Torchwood?
My Torchwood pitch would be like mid season two, kind of similar to my Steed pitch. You just get Dame Diana Rigg and John Barrowman to hang out for like an hour, just swapping stories and being like caddy and enjoying a Campari and soda together. I think pulling like old Peel back into action for a story would be so cool, particularly for Torchwood, particularly with that Captain Jack relationship. And then again, I think it could lead into something like a Sarah Jane Adventures, where you have Sarah Jane and Mrs. Peel dueling reporters who end up on a secret case together that they blunder into. Like there is a lot of room in that spin-off era of Doctor Who for like Mrs. Peel comes back stories.
Absolutely.
That I find really just particularly tantalizing, especially with, you know, Dame Diana Rigg did end up showing up in later Doctor Who. So like that era of Diana Rigg is still a terrific one. It'd be a great showcase.
I like the idea now of the villain she played in Doctor Who was actually, you know, a knight from way back. She's her ancestor.
The Sweet Town stuff is where they got the fortune to start with, and then it just rolls over.
Well, the thing is, did they actually specify what her father's business was?
They just say industrialist, as far as I know.
Sweet manufacturer. He's an evil Willy Wonka. Who knows?
there's your prequel, the Second Doctor versus Evil Willy Wonka.
Sweet Town does sound like a very Avengers villain base, doesn't it? Sweet Town.
Absolutely.
And the handy thing is, with both of those characters, with Captain Jack, he's been around forever, so she could have done some work with Torchwood back in the 60s. So you've got the show set there, where they're both in their, well, where she's in her prime. And then you do the Footwards one, where she's like become this sort of honoured, M-like figure for Torchwood. And so he calls on her again, needs her help. And the same goes for Sarah Jane. If you have Mrs. Emma Peel working with the Third Doctor and UNIT family right at the end, when Sarah Jane just joins the Third Doctor, and then she calls on her again. And just for a bit of flavour, if you recall in the Avengers credits and in the Avengers episodes, John Steed would always say, "Mrs. Peel, we're needed." Yeah? And Sarah Jane in her show would always say, "Oh, was it Mr. Smith, I need you?
Mr. Smith, I need you."
There you go.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
you can, you know, for a bit of nostalgia, just have her call up and say, "Mrs. Peel, I need you." And just, you know, juxtapose the catchphrases. So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, I quite like the idea, actually, that she just turns up on Mr. Smith's computer screen one day and it should be impossible, but somehow she's done it and says, "Sarah Jane, I need you," and then you reverse it.
Oh yeah, that'd be awesome. Two of them like roaming the countryside with K-9.
Yep. And you know,
that'd be killer.
And you know, at least one or two of the female companions in Sarah Jane Adventures would say, I want to be a spy now. I want to work with Mrs. Emma Peel, because they'll be completely impressed with her.
Oh yeah, this would be like a huge moment for Skye. Yeah. Skye decides, like, I'm going to be a spy.
Yeah, yeah. Skye the spy. There you go.
Oh,
yeah.
That'd be good. And then you have a whole little subplot of her doing Harriet the Spy stuff.
That'd be very good. Fantastic. That'd be very good.
Oh, no, I was just going to say we could dig into the doctors, because I...
Can I just ask, though, because usually you're the one who advocates for doing Class as a spin-off as well.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, that one's obvious. We sort of set it up in Sarah Jane. I think there's a new teacher. It's Mrs. Peel. Yeah. They think she's there to deal with something alien, but she's actually there to deal with something, like, spy-related, like espionage-y, that has nothing to do with aliens. And then it turns out it's aliens, you know?
I was going to say, you're not going to do it. Remember that episode of The X-Files where... there's that old friend of Fox Mulder, and it turns out it actually is just a serial killer, not aliens. And he thought it was aliens, and it turns out to be something mundane, but still horrifying.
Yeah, that'd be perfect for Class too, if it was like a spy in the school or something.
Yeah, you'd need to. Yeah, I was going to say you'd need to be careful not to up the angst too much with Class, but I think that would actually work quite well. This idea that it wasn't aliens for once would freak them out. In fact, weirdly enough, it could be quite a good, no pun intended, teaching moment. That the kids realize it's not just aliens that are the terrifying things in the world, that sometimes humans are the bad guys.
Yeah, yeah. You could do like a terror recruiting cell thing, like just like something very grounded would be interesting for that show to tackle. And Mrs. Peel would be, again, like Diana Rigg and just Mrs. Peel and Mrs. Quill. That's your hands don't touch the keys, the scenes just write themselves.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, I not to be that guy, but I quite like the idea that Mrs. Quill kind of fancies her a little bit.
Oh, absolutely.
Just enough.
There's she throws some line at the end about, like, you want to go shoot cans later or something. Like the two of them admiring each other's pistol work would be very funny. There's so much room for, like, funny interchanges with those characters that it's hard to resist.
Why didn't they let us write the right Class? I mean, we've written so many episodes of Class during these.
I wish they had done so many years of Class. I'm on the record about this. I wish they'd given it more of a chance than they did.
So you realize, of course,
there's a lot of room in that show.
Throughout these episodes, so far we've got the Brigadier going undercover as the headmaster of the Coal Hill School, and now we've got Mrs. Emma Peel as a probably the photography teacher or something like that.
Steed take over for Chesterton too, if I remember right. Like, pretty wild on Coal Hill. This is all part of one wild season that ends in, of course, Crisis on Infinite Cameos.
Exactly.
Where all the cameos take over Class.
If we ever cover Harry Potter, I think the crossover there writes itself. So.
Especially for Class, yes.
Yeah. So, okay.
The Coal Hill Quidditch team. Oh, God.
Oh man, God. Alive. That'd
just
be good.
Kill me.
I was going to say, yeah, Dumbledore goes undercover as a teacher for some reason. And
in our version of Class, none of the teachers are human beings. And I think that's a much funnier version of Class.
That's true.
Like, everybody has some weird, well, I mean, Emma Peel is, there are average human beings, I'm mistaken, but they all have some, like, heightened story.
They're all exceptional. Yeah. Crisis on Infinite Class.
Yeah, like everyone is a young adult novel character. Like everyone is like clumsy and human, but also the greatest at bows and arrows. Like it's a much funnier version of that show is if every single character is a YA protagonist.
Well, that's something we have to write now, I think. We owe it to ourselves to get it out of our systems. Yeah, Katniss and Buffy fall through a wormhole during Home Economics and...
Then they have to fight over, like, Edward the Vampire in science class.
Well, who's going to kill him, not who's going to save him.
Mm-hmm.
So, right, let's hastily move on to the Doctors now before this actually becomes the episode. The First Doctor, you said you thought there might be some issues there.
No, I don't know how much... Basically, my pitch for the First Doctor would be, I think it would be more interesting to do the First Doctor and like early companions doing that Amazonian forest adventure with Peter Peel. Like, I think that would be my angle in, and it's like giant ants or something. I don't know.
So, how would Mrs. Emma Peel fit into this if you're doing the adventure with Peter Peele.
That would be the thing, is I think I would have her not necessarily a component of the First Doctor story. Like, if we're doing this whole tapestry thing, like we tend to do, I would maybe save Emma for the Second Doctor.
Oh, interesting.
So the Second Doctor knows this sort of secret about where Peter is and that he's fine and he can't tell her. And it, like, there'd be a much more interesting interplay leading up to the unit years. Like, there's just, yeah, there's...
No, I think that's a good idea, actually.
Story.
Because obviously we're trying to help GMs and players craft stories here. So it's perfectly legitimate to, in an episode about Mrs. Emma Peel, to not have her in the first part. And then in the second part with the Second Doctor. I mean, I was thinking, I sort of mentioned those Silurians earlier on, and not to sort of jump onto the Third Doctor. But what if Peter Peel is not missing at all? He's actually made contact with some suspended animation Silurians or Eocenes, and he's acting, I know we're kind of treading on a later episode, but he's acting as an ambassador and sort of helping them integrate.
Yeah, for an earlier attempt at that. I love that. Yeah. That's great. And then, yeah, UNIT goes and they bring in Mrs. Peel as a special associate, and it turns out that Peter's there, and that's the big reunion. I think that really heightens everything in a very cool way.
That'd be very good. That'd be really good. I like that a lot. So with the Second Doctor, so with the First Doctor, you have to sort of differentiate between First Doctor at the start when he's grumpy and, you know, the sort of kindly granddad version that he is at the end, his granddaughter, Barbara. No, not Barbara. What's Susan? Susan. Wow, sorry.
Yeah. Well, Susan,
I do apologise. I'm ashamed. I will resign. But yeah, post
you're fired.
Post Susan, they'd probably get on a lot better. But again, he's still
After the rescue, for me, it's the two part of the rescue that's like the turnkey from the First Doctor who would smash a caveman's head in to the First Doctor who actually cares about people. Like, the rescue is like, oh, he cares now. You made him care more.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that. I think it's my favorite Hartnell story to begin with, but it's mostly because it's like, oh, he's the Doctor. Cool. All right. We're off to the races.
And I think also with the First Doctor, probably not that appropriate to have the flirting banter so much.
No, I think it'd be very funny for if you were to do a First Doctor and Emma Peel story, the First Doctor endlessly critiquing her cat suits and like asking her to put like actual clothes on would be very funny, particularly considering Zoe and the Second Doctor. Like, it, like this, the sort of fashion arc we're playing out too.
I was going to say, because
funny.
As far as I'm aware, Zoe comes on board and she's already got the spangly jumpsuit on. Because I was just thinking, if Zoe had actually changed into that in the TARDIS from her future clothes, you could do the joining story that Mrs. Emma Peel left behind one of her cat suits once during a First Doctor adventure because he kept moaning at her and she had to go undercover. So she'd, oh, fine, I'll put on a dowdy suit for you. And she leaves that behind. And then Zoe sees it and goes, oh, wow, it's amazing. I've got to wear this. And the Second Doctor's okay with it.
It's so nostalgic.
Yeah. But yeah, Second Doctor, I think she'd get on with a lot more because that was more her era. It was more the Second Doctor was the swinging 60s part of the 60s. And that's very much Mrs. Emma Peel. Yeah. So I think they'd get on quite well. I think the Second Doctor would almost flirt back as much as he could.
Jamie would be bold.
Yeah, Jamie would really. Yeah, yeah. And then maybe you set up a Zoe jealousy thing. I don't know. But Victoria would hate her.
Oh, yeah. Victoria would
really free him.
But then they'd end up being like the best of friends and having like tea and biscuits.
Well, possibly. I mean, you could even say Victoria coming from the late 19th century, when she's dropped off in what was the present, you could have an episode where Mrs. Emma Peel helps her acclimatize.
Yes. Oh, that'd be cool. Yeah, she goes to Mrs. Peel's unit training school.
Yeah, exactly. From now on, I'm just going to say Emma Peel. I've been very formal and referred to her as Mrs. Emma Peel throughout this, but I'm just going to say Emma Peel from now on. Okay, just as a shortcut. No offense to Mrs. Emma Peel. Obviously, I hold her in the highest regard, but I just want everyone to know it's not a lack of respect thing. It's a brevity thing.
Mrs. Peel's unit training school, name unchanged, don't worry.
Mrs. Peel's unit, MPUTS. MPUTS would be the acronym.
Well, unit already is an acronym, so it's
true.
It goes all over the place. It gets very recursive, and then it gets wibbly wobbly, and here we are.
It's true, because if you left the M off, it would just be putts, which in America, I'm given to believe, is something of an insult if you call someone a putt.
That's not good. Yeah. I don't like that. You have to figure something else out.
Yeah.
It's better than Steed Stud. No,
than Steed Stud. Oh my god.
You know, we're...
What happened to him, man? The 70s were not good for John Steed.
They weren't good for a lot of things, man. Oh boy.
So the third Doctor, which I think is, you know, strangely enough, given that the third Doctor is the 70s, it does seem to be the sweet spot for putting Emma Peel and John Steed, as we discussed earlier, into Doctor Who. Kind of strange that, isn't it, really, when you think about it? Does that mean that the Avengers are ahead of their time, or what?
I mean, absolutely. I would say yes. Yeah, I always got the vibe that the third Doctor era got a lot from the Avengers. You know, the stuck on Earth, dealing with weird cases thing is, I mean, it's, you know, general procedural, but it always had kind of an Avengers flair.
True. And also the first Doctor to be a snappy dresser. But possibly the only Doctor to be a snappy dresser, I'm not sure. That's a judgment call. But definitely the first Doctor to be a snappy dresser.
To each their own, yes, yes.
Yeah. But the third Doctor of his time was kind of timeless, but also you looked at him and thought, that's a man who knows how to dress, because the third Doctor was almost perfectly framed in those clothes, you know?
Yeah, yeah. He's one of those Doctors who... But I think the Doctor's outfits are the best when the people playing the Doctor get to decide, because they're more comfortable in their own clothes, obviously, to the point where they're, you know what, we'll get there when we get there. Never mind. Yeah.
But the third Doctor, kind of obvious. I think the Avengers, you know, the UK Avengers would absolutely just fit. You could just literally drop the Avengers, Emma Peel and John Steed, into the 70s, into the third Doctor's era, without doing anything, really, if you didn't want to.
Yeah, no, they did mesh perfectly. It'd be like the Avengers reunion special, the Avengers unit reunion special would be awesome. Again, it's one of those things that, like, writes itself.
I mean, the only thing I could think of, as I said earlier, was I like the idea of Emma Peel taking Joe Grant under her wing.
Absolutely.
To help boost her confidence and her spy skills. Because think about it as well. Joe Grant, all right, she works for UNIT, so technically she's part of intelligence, but she's not very good at it. Whereas Mrs. Emma Peel was exceptional at it, but wasn't a spy, so she could sort of say, look, you can be really good. You don't need to rely on sort of orthodox training and stuff like that. So
yeah, Mrs. Peel's finishing school for young spies. Yeah. I'm going to just keep changing the name till it works.
Miss MP Futt.
Nobody abbreviates Xavier School for Gifted Children. It would make their brain explode.
Well, literally.
But get out of here. Nobody's doing that.
Yeah, but, you know, they're American, so... Anyway,
that's true. I did go to NYU, which is ridiculous. It just means New York University. What am I doing?
There is actually an Avengers Academy in America. I can't think where it is, because I've forgotten. But I looked it up, and it actually exists. And it was not named for the X-Men, obviously. But a guy called Xavier founded an academy, and the student body obviously called themselves the X-Men.
That rules.
Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, imagine that. What the academy does. I have no idea what the academy does, but I just remember this was way back in the 90s. I assume it's still there. But, yeah, there's an Avengers Academy, and they literally changed their brand of their school to the X logo, a stylized version of the X logo, so they didn't get sued.
That's genius.
So, yeah, the marketing alone. You would get people buying their jumpers and baseball caps and blah-de-blah, regardless of whether they've been to the school or care or anything.
I don't know if their mascot is. I hope their mascot's the Blackbirds. That'd be pretty good.
Oh, that would be good. That would be good. I hope they were that clever. I really hope they were that clever. Yeah. I mean, to be honest, it was probably Wolverines, though, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no. That's true. Here's the thing. I went to most of the elementary schools or high schools, rather, in Pennsylvania were all, like, horses or gladiators. It's all stupid crap that has nothing to do with where we're from. So I don't know. Yeah. Hopefully it was something good.
My university closed down and went to Belgium, so I can't really sort of comment.
That is incredible.
Yeah. So
you must have made a great impression.
I like to think I was the sole cause. I had to, it was lucky actually. They had a big incident, shall we say, and a lot of the records got wiped out.
Oh, and my.
I was very lucky I had a copy of my degree. That's all I'm going to say about
that. Oh, my.
Yes, so, Mr. Sulu, the Fourth Doctor.
Ah, yes, the Fourth Doctor. The Fourth Doctor's always really weird with... I say always, but it's been two of these so far. But the Fourth Doctor's difficult for the Avengers because he's very consciously leaving that unit era behind. So having the Fourth Doctor re-interact with the Avengers is an interesting prospect. Like, I don't really have a pitch for this one.
No, and the Fourth Doctor, again, very much a when Fourth Doctor.
Yeah.
Because if we're talking about the Doctor with Romana, I don't think we'd have much time for them because they were on a different level intellectually and everything. You know, they were just... Yeah. And also, early Fourth Doctor, like you said, he's trying to get away from the establishment.
I mean, I'd even... Sort of. Yeah, I think the first thing that really comes to mind for me for Emma Peel is, like, after the Fourth Doctor drops Sarah Jane off, maybe Emma Peel has like some sort of like part of the finishing school, quote unquote, is like a reacclimation thing. Like we were saying with Victoria or Joe Grant or any of that stuff is like, just come here and hang out. Like you need some convalescent time after being across time and space or dealing with evil robots or any of that sort of stuff. Come have a nice cup of tea at Mrs. Peel's. Like that feels like kind of where you could start that friendship. Like even Joe like recommends True. To Sarah, like, oh, you should talk to this lady I know. There's again, like it's weird. I keep wanting to do like Emma Peel stories where the Doctor is barely there. Like Emma Peel and companion stories are really interesting to me. Like the human effect of all the stuff.
Funnily enough, I know what I said earlier, but Emma Peel and Romana.
That would be great. I was gonna bristle against that because I think Emma Peel and Romana would have an excellent dynamic.
Yeah, I think so. Which one would you go for, though? The first Romana or the second one?
I'm always a Lala Ward guy. I really like the second Romana a lot. I could see...
No, so do I. I just feel like the first Romana, though, I feel like would be...
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm with There's you something there. There.
Yeah, I think, like, Emma Peel and Romana 1 ditching the boys to go search for a segment of the Key to Time... would be that'd great. Be like, it'd just be that'd so be much really fun.
Yeah, I think so. I think that'd be really, really good. Again, and you could do a two-parter. You could do the Romana 1 and Romana 2. You know, they meet up a little bit later on and they have another adventure. I think the continuity would be good there because nothing much shakes Emma Peel. And so the idea of, you know, a friend of hers suddenly changing completely.
She just thinks she changed faces or had like the Avengers version of plastic surgery where they completely change an actor, which happens all the time in spy stuff.
Exactly.
You know, like it'd be one of those things like, oh, they changed your face. Well, great. Who's your guy?
Yeah.
You could have a bunch of jokes about that.
Actually, that reminds me, I want to say this. We've not done this, and it might be something we could add into these episodes. We don't ever really say what would their reaction be to going inside the TARDIS. You know, there's obviously the classic is it's bigger on the inside. It might be an idea to start doing it with these Another Universe segments of like, what do you think they would say when they see the inside of the TARDIS the first time? Would be quite a telling thing.
I think Steven Peele would play it so cool. I think Emma Peel would be like, oh, this is very nice. How'd you do this? Mirrors? What's the... Oh, very nice. Like, I don't think she'd have the... Obviously, yeah, she wouldn't have the, like, Peter Capaldi, yeah. My concept of reality is shattered. You know, she's not going to give the Doctor the ideal response he's seeking, I think.
I like the idea that she would just go up to the Doctor with a business card and say... Here you go, darling. Here's my interior decorator. Can help you.
Oh, yes, yes. That would be very good.
You know, especially if it's one of the later Doctors.
You need some chairs. Yes, you just...
Well, the funny thing is, although we've said about the Fourth Doctor not really fitting with them, I think the Fourth Doctor's backup TARDIS, the wood console...
Oh, yeah.
That would be the one they like.
Yeah.
Out of all of them, I think.
You should stick with this one. This one's great. He's like, but the wood warps, you know.
Beware the wood warps.
We finally made the Game of Rassilon recurring gag of the wood warping between uses. We make that joke all the time about the sets.
Nice. So yeah. So okay. So that brings us on to the fifth, I believe.
Yes. Yes. I think they get along terribly well.
I think they'd get on, but I just have this feeling that Emma Peel would find him a bit on the boring side.
Oh, and also he's very... It's that strange dichotomy of the Fifth Doctor where he feels like the youngest one, and I think she'd find this, like, strange cricket-loving boy by her perspective very interesting. Like, I don't know how well she would connect this guy to the previous Doctors she's known, which is something funny. I could see the Fifth Doctor playing it off like he's the previous Doctor's son or something.
I quite like the idea of her turning up at a cricket match and, like, annihilating everyone and, like, hitting it for six every time, and the Fifth Doctor just can't bowl her out. And he's like, how is this happening? And then at the end, she pulls off her helmet and reveals that it's her. You know? I think that'd be a good cold open for an episode. It's not really a plot, but I think it'd be a good cold open for an episode of getting them together.
Yeah, agreed. For a second there, I thought you were going to say she pulled her helmet off and it was the Master! And I would also be fine with that. If Anthony Ainley's final disguise was Dame Diana Rigg. I have tricked you!
We play the game again, Time Lord.
Emma Peel as... although Dame Diana Rigg as the first Ronnie, let's do it. Let's rewrite history, baby. Let's do that.
She hits the ball for six and then takes off her helmet and it's Emma Peel. And then the Doctor goes, beware the wood wasp.
Beware.
As the bat...
Between seasons.
And the bat turns into something.
Oh, yeah.
So, six.
Again, I have no idea what Emma Peel would make of the Sixth Doctor.
Well, okay, look, I know it's an obvious thing because it's a Sixth Doctor, but she's going to give him terrible, terrible grief for his clone.
Oh, yeah. Again, with every one of these Another Universes we figure out, she's going to be the reason he gets the blue coat.
Yeah. Well, everyone we've done so far has been quite stylish, I think, haven't they?
Yeah, that tends to be the way. I mean...
So we need to do someone who's scruffy next time.
We did
time,
do
so
Billy Butcher. He is very unfashionable, but he does have those great shirts. So it's tricky.
But he's also got an iconic black leather trench coat thing, which is still better than the Sixth Doctor's coat.
With that strip of duct tape on the back, it is an incredible coat. It really is, man. You're not wrong.
Yeah.
So
the Sixth Doctor again.
I will say, though, this is the first one of these we've done where, as much as I love Evelyn Smythe, I would want, like, Evelyn Smythe and the older Mrs. Peel we've contrived. Like, I think Emma Peel and Perry would be very fun. Like, Emma Peel and Perry doing, like, spy stuff would be, like, a great time. That would be a fun time for characters, players, anybody. Like, Perry having to learn sneaking around from someone who herself is, like, a skilled amateur, Emma Peel, would be, like... Yeah, I just, like, the kind of... Six and Perry and Steed and Peel on a spy adventure sounds very funny to me, because the Sixth Doctor cannot be a spy. Like, he just will fail. So it's like him and Steed having to do, like, baccarat on, like, a cruise ship, like, it's just not gonna work, you know.
I like the idea that they do something, and the Doctor, obviously being a genius mathematician, is counting cards, but he still loses, and then he just announces, but you're cheating, you can't beat me, I'm the Doctor. And, like, John Steed's like, shut up, Doctor, we're supposed to be undercover, that's the whole point.
Stop it. Yeah. He does a whole speech about it.
It would also be a good excuse, I know, like you said before, the catalyst for the blue coat, that Steed and Peel, or even just Emma Peel, basically say, look, you can't wear that coat, we're undercover, so here, you've got to wear a tuxedo or something. And, like, the only tuxedo the Doctor's got is, like, the blue coat.
Yeah.
That's the most, down-low clothing he's got. So it was still fit, like I said, because if you got him undercover, you can get him out of that coat, which is clearly the raison d'etre for anyone writing any Sixth Doctor episodes now.
It does seem to be. Just ask Colin Baker. He wanted that all-black outfit. Yeah. This would be our opportunity.
He wanted the Eccleston outfit, didn't he? That was the one he pitched. So, seven.
Oh, seven. Seven's tricky.
I mean, you've got an angle with Ace being uncouth and Emma Peel clashing with her or trying to teach her to be a proper lady, something like that, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I think seven being the meddling master behind their orders at the Ministry. There's a lot of stuff there, too.
Yeah, but we've heard rumours of a person pulling the strings called D behind the scenes. Yeah. Turns out it was you, Doctor, all along.
Yes, that's, yeah, that would be it. Like, he was also moonlighting as the Ministry's tactics advisor or something.
Exactly. He was the one who had the original idea for MPUTs or whatever it ends up being called.
Yeah, hopefully not that. But I know we just did this with Six and Perry, but like Seven, Ace, and the two of them on a spy adventure would also be really funny, because Ace wouldn't, I don't think Ace would be terribly great at like the spy stuff, even though I think she'd be super jazzed to be in a spy movie, you know? Like this is proper James Bond stuff. And then like Steve and Peele, like, you have to calm down. You can't keep doing that. Like, it would be
That would be a really good moment of them just constantly trying to keep her cool throughout the whole thing. Especially if she's got the Nitro 9 handy.
Oh, yeah.
She's like, let's...
Emma Peel chucking a can of Nitro 9, that's the reason you do the crossover. That's what that's for.
Yeah. I think Emma Peel, when Bernie Summerfield, would be a good combo.
Very. Yeah, some kind of weird booby-trapped tomb and the two of them. I know Emma Peel doesn't do a lot of archaeological adventures, but you gotta... She's doing an explorer. She's doing something with... it's her and Mr. Peel. They're having a tour to, like, rekindle things, and they bump into the Eighth Doctor and Bernie Summerfield at a weird tomb full of monsters. Great.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah. I mean, you know what? Or even, if you want to put it into Emma Peel's backstory... Bernie Summerfield is looking for the long-lost legend of Peter Peel, who went into the Amazon forest one day, who was, you know, clearly an explorer and a man after Bernie Summerfield's own heart. She says to the Doctor, can we please go back to the 1960s? I really want to find out what this is. And thus, the mystery unfolds.
Oh, yeah. And if I'm...
And possibly that's why Peter Peel went missing for 2 years, because he went on board the TARDIS as a companion. And the Doctor, remember, the Doctor at that stage didn't have complete control, so it took him 2 years to get him back home.
Yes. Yeah, they were fiddling about in time and space, having adventures. I also, if I remember right, Benny's son is named Peter, so you could do something there with, you know, named after an old friend.
Lovely. That all writes itself. It's a neat little package there. Yeah. So big finish, if you want to get in contact with us again.
Call me. Yeah. As we say here in Los Angeles, call me. We'll do lunch over Zoom. Anyway,
let's touch base, BF.
Have your people call my people being me, just call me. Anyway,
contact us through MPUTs.
Yes, just say contact, and then we'll say contact, and then we'll be in contact. That's how it works, right?
There you go, simple.
Contact.
You kind of covered 8 a little bit there.
Yeah, 8's pretty well. Yeah, I think we cracked 8. 9 is always very tricky, but then again, like, it's like, yeah, 9 and Rose doing a spy story would be really fun. Rose would be having a great time. 9 would have a laugh, which she desperately needs. I think would be.
I like the idea of get for some reason I'm liking this idea that Emma Peel comes along and it ends up being a spy adventure because that's her, and she's always getting the Doctor to dress in a. Saying to the Doctor, dress in something appropriate, and every single one of them dresses in a tuxedo because they just think James Bond, and it's completely inappropriate every single time.
Yes, it'd be funny too, because again, with the lineup of companions we've been doing, like, I think Rose dealing with an Avengers style spy story and like trying to do a James Bond spy story and like bumping into the stuff there would be very funny. Like Rose being like, where's your cool gadget? Why doesn't your shoe fire a laser? And Emma Peel's like, don't be ridiculous. And then like Steed fires a grappling hook out of his umbrella. Like, you know, there's so much room to like juxtapose that kind of stuff.
You'd get a lot of comedy out of Rose trying to be posh as well.
Yes. Oh my God. Yeah. Yeah. The like undercover scenes with 9 in a tux and Rose and some, you know, period thing from the TARDIS wardrobe. This is a thing we haven't really hit on because I don't know. I don't want to be accused of being a sexist, but I think Emma Peel in the TARDIS wardrobe with any of the Doctors or any of the companions would be a very funny montage. Like Emma Peel dealing with all the weird stuff in the TARDIS wardrobe would be very funny.
That would be good.
Just a montage of Steed trying on different hats. Like, there's room for a very good piece of comedy in that TARDIS wardrobe, I think.
Definitely. Oh, by the way, I accuse you of being sexist.
Ah, damn it!
Sorry, I knew you were trying to avoid that. I'm sorry.
Damn!
Just, you know.
Ah, God!
Sorry. J'accuse. Oh, and beware the wood warps.
J'accused! Someone French just exploded. My job here is done! Speaking of the TARDIS wardrobe, though, the 10th Doctor has that big opening moment in the wardrobe, so I can also see that being the, you know, that could be the catalyst. Maybe Steed and Peele are the reason he gets the blue suit. They're like, you have to have two suits. Like, come on, buddy. You can't just... A brown suit, what are you doing?
Actually, I was thinking that kind of writes itself, because the 10th Doctor is the one that wears the tuxedo.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's perfect. That is very good.
So, link straight into that. This is, he's awake.
And then mid-adventure, Emma Peele just looks down at his shoes and goes, trainers? Come on.
Just the dismay on her face, the withering look she would give him. That would be great.
It's a lot of running. We do a lot of running. And then by the end, she's got a pair of nice trainers with arch support. She's like, these are very good.
Yeah, you know, actually, I don't recall a lot of running in the Avengers. I'm sure there was a lot. There was a lot. But I'm just trying to think, did Emma Peele run in heels every episode or what? I need to go back and research that.
I hope not. Those poor ankles.
It's an arduous task, but I'm prepared for doing it.
Brutal.
Yeah, exactly. So so the 10th Doctor, I think that could be the origin of his tuxedo.
He steals one of Steed's. That would be good. So he's like, have one of my old ones. I never wear it anymore. I've worn it twice. It's ruined.
But yeah, is there anything that sort of stands out adventure-wise for Emma Peele?
For me, once we hit the sort of back half of the Doctors, it really just turns into like a dynamics game, like a character dynamics game. You could really swap in any... For the Avengers, in my heart of hearts, it's the Cybernauts. They're doing something bad. The Avengers have to stop them with wit and fun, and the Doctor and Companion are along for the ride.
I mean, there has to be a Cybernauts teaming up with the Cybermen adventure. There just has to be.
Yeah, you get a Cybernaut with the handles on the head. I mean, that's it. You know, Earth and Mondas finally reunited.
and it feels so good.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they plug in the cyber ports. I'll leave that off screen, as Patrick McNee would insist. Exactly. Not in view of camera, as he stated.
So, I think with 11, because he's a slightly classier dresser, I don't know. I think they would leave that alone. But I have the feeling that Emma Peele would like the 11th Doctor. Just, I don't know if it's just because he's so weird, she would find it kind of appealing.
Yeah.
No pun intended.
But again, I think. Like a spy adventure with Steed and Peele and Eleven and Clara would be really fun. Like, they've got all the dynamics of it. You know, you take like Bells of St. John driving the motorcycle up a side of a building. That's some real Avengers-y stuff. Like,
that's
definitely Avengers stuff. Yeah, they've had good fun with that. Emma Peele on that motorcycle would be awesome.
I like the idea that she would sort of puncture Clara's ego a little bit as well, because Clara was always like, how pretty am I kind of a thing, very kind of arrogant, and I like the idea of Emma Peele coming on board and like, no, that's a beautiful
keep it
woman.
To yourself,
that's a beautiful,
darling.
Exactly. Play it down. There's no.
And as opposed to the Doctor having the crush, I think Clara would have a profound crush on Emma Peele.
Yes, I think
the dynamic of
I
that would be very funny. You know, Emma Peele takes Clara to task. Takes Clara to task. Jeez, takes Clara to task, and Clara's like, "Oh!" Like, she's never really been challenged like that. I think that would be a funny thing to play out.
Not true. And now, and let's not forget, a good chance for some crossover here. Clara, a version of Clara, the Impossible Girl, was around for the Third Doctor, means. Emma Peele could have met her Emputz or whatever and trained her or whatever it was, and they could have had a previous relationship. And then, like I said, obviously this is kind of like a retcon, but quite a cool one. If you do have Emma Peele meet the 11th Doctor and Clara contemporaneously, before the Doctor has figured out who the Impossible Girl is, she says to the Doctor, look, I've met her before and she looked exactly like that and you weren't there and it wasn't time travel. In fact, she didn't even have the name Clara. What's that all about? And then the 11th Doctor goes, let me think.
Yeah, another link in the chain. Girl. That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That could work quite well. Yeah. So, 12.
Ooh. 12?
Bill would love her.
Yes.
Bill would just love her.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, again, like Clara would still love Mrs. Peel, and Bill would absolutely love Mrs. Peel. Yeah. Yeah. That, yeah, the dynamics there are awesome.
And the natural fit, I think, is the university years.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, like visiting Professor Emma Peel would be really interesting.
Yeah.
Like something contemporaneous would be very cool there.
I know this is, I don't know if this is just fan service or what, but I like the idea.
I mean, this whole thing is, you're fine.
Well, I know, okay, but this is really fan service. I'm just thinking, yeah, I just realised, yeah, that's a podcast about role playing by definition. But yeah, the idea that because the Doctor knows Emma Peel from way back from his previous incarnations, he even lets her guard Missy once in a while.
Ooh,
and
yeah.
She has conversations with Missy, you know. I quite like this, you know.
Emma Peel and Missy having tea together is, that is an image that is not going to leave my brain for a little while. That's cool.
And I like the idea of them playing sort of mental chess games. Like Missy's constantly trying to get out.
Oh yeah, which cup of tea has the poison, and they keep switching the teas back and forth, and it ends up it's just tea. Like all the little spy on spy, it's like the spy versus spy comedy stuff is,
exactly.
That would be, well, that would so be what, good. Yeah.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Man. Especially if you get them in like a house that Jack built thing, where they're, for some reason, they're trapped in a building in the university that's somehow dislocated in time and space. And they're chasing each other around, and they're doing spy versus spy stuff, trying to blow each other up and kill each other or stop each other. Would be great. And if you remember, they sort of put the Doctor, the 12th Doctor, at that university for decades. So you could just as easily have Emma Peel, in her relative youth, dealing with Missy. You could have had, I mean, as long as you've got Emma Peel at the university, she might have a long-standing kind of relationship with Missy.
Yeah.
Throughout the years. Every so often the Doctor says, look, I need to go out, I don't know, look for Gallifrey, I don't know, whatever. Can you look after watching Missy for a couple of days? And so you've got this anthology of stories.
Emma Peel sitting in on 12's classes too would be awesome. Like Emma really Peel guest lecturer would be fantastic.
I like the idea that the Doctor was teaching Venusian Aikido to people, and then Emma Peel comes in and says, no, this is how you do it properly.
You're going
to
put your leg there. Yeah, yeah. She starts correcting his form. Yeah. Yes, that's the stuff.
But like, yeah, because you just sort of say, yeah, so you've got, you know, you've got like once a decade, the Doctor says to Emma Peel, can you watch Missy for me? I need to nip out. And so you've got, you know, you've got, let's say they were there for 50 years. You've got 5 adventures with Emma Peel and Missy doing whatever.
That's just enough adventures for a Big Finish box set. Wink, 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 wink.
Ah,
wink,
you noted.
Wink, 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 wink.
Big Finish, you know where Mputz is by now.
Yeah, so. Email us. Text me. Yeah.
I think that would be quite good because it would start off a more physical confrontation. And then I think it's fair to say that by the end, Missy could come to respect her as an adversary.
Yeah. I think Emma Peel would be one of the humans she likes, but will not admit it.
Especially if she's sharing war stories, because Emma Peel must have killed some people.
Oh, yeah. That is the thing. The Doctor won't talk about that, but Emma Peel will be like, yeah, I shot that guy. He was a Nazi. Who cares? Yeah. Like there's a difference there. Yeah.
Exactly. So I think that's there's a nice little sort of set of side stories you could do. Which brings us on to the 13th. And I hate to say it, but I'm kind of drawing a blank on the 13th, really.
Oh, I think, again, like with Steed, I think 13 and the time travel fam having a spy adventure in the 60s, like doing a proper Spyfall to make up for Spyfall going kind of awry on them, like that would be fun. I think it would be great. Like the Doctor and the gang nipping back for a spy adventure and finding it's more complicated than they expect. I think, like, again, like Emma Peel would not know what to make of the 13th Doctor either, which would be very cool. Like, if you take the idea of, like, the modern woman of the 60s or 70s, Emma Peel, well, 60s rather, and have the 13th Doctor and Yaz drop in on her, that's going to be, like, a culture clash that I think would be interesting. And
I guess it's been confirmed by the BBC. They just sort of let it out that Graham and Ryan are leaving. So if you do like a 13 and Yaz and the Avengers adventure, I think that would be very fun. Like, that would be really cool. Like Steed and Peel and two other women, like, dealing with crazy spy stuff, and two of them are even more modern ideas of like a modern woman interacting with Peel. Like, the, again, like the dynamics there are really appealing.
I think that could work. The only idea I had was, for some reason, and I don't even know if this could happen, is that Steed and Peel, or just Peel, is on holiday. She's got a rare day off. She's sunning herself in the south of France, and then the TARDIS rocks up with the 13th Doctor and the fam, and they sort of drag her out, and she doesn't want to be on a spy mission, but they make her, and because the Doctor knows her from the past, she's always sort of saying, remember the good old days, spy this, spy that, and she's like, no.
Yeah, I'm on vacation from that. I'm trying to avoid that.
I want a break. And the Doctor can't wrap her head around the idea of what a vacation, what's that?
Yeah, you sure this isn't a working vacation, or just sort of a...
Exactly.
Work trip?
Like... I remember Blackpool once, but that's it. So, yeah.
I went to Brighton Beach with Ramona, right. But it was cold. Yeah.
Yeah, it really was bitterly cold, as I am experiencing right now. It's freezing cold in England, by the way, listener, just in case you don't realise at this point. We're filming this in early December, and it's very cold where I am.
There's a breeze in California.
Yeah.
We were talking before recording about how I'm wearing a t-shirt and how Ryan wants to kill me.
In the nicest, most positive hands across the sea kind of way.
Oh, yeah, I understand. You're freezing to death. The thing is, you wouldn't be able to get across the room to get to me. You would freeze solid. Like in Lorne Greene victory pose, like in The Simpsons.
Well, I think that's covered Mrs. Emma Peel top to bottom now.
I hope so. Quite nicely. Yeah.
We will be back with another episode of, well, not just Wibbly Wobbly Dicey Wicey, but also another universe. We've got plenty of other characters to cover. If you do want to drop us a line, please subscribe, rate and review. And if there's any characters you want us to cover, again, we're on the forums. We're on Twitter, www.dwpod. We've got an email address, all in the show notes. Michael, do you want to plug Game of Rassilon and your personal social media for the 900th time on here?
Absolutely. Please, if you're not already listening, you can find us at Rassilon Pod on the various socials media. The Game of Rassilon is a actual play Doctor Who podcast. We're telling our own stories with our own doctor. And depending on when this is out, we may have launched our Patreon, which will include additional story releases. Our first one is our doctor, Riley Silverman. She takes on the role of GM to take us through the Game of Classilon, a young adult inspired. It was a very fun playthrough of Lasers and Feelings, which is a much simpler game system to play with your friends. So yeah, check it out. And you can find us thegameofrassilon.com, or you can find me at Michael Nixon on the various socials things. Yeah, that's me.
I just want to point out Riley Silverman sounds a bit like someone of the Mondas persuasion to me. Watch out for that.
She hasn't. I haven't noticed any handles on her head, but I will check.
Okay. I'd also, I'm going to plug my upcoming guest appearance on Game of Rassilon. We don't know when it's going to be.
It's going to be huge. Season defining. Yeah.
And this is going to be Gabby Hayes big, okay?
Yeah, announcing.
If they do an Oscar for guest starring on someone else's podcast, okay?
The Guesties. Guesties 2021 nominee.
There's been rumblings. Exactly. So, okay, well, thank you very much, Michael. I will see you again soon. And yes, by the time this one comes out, you'll be practically a season regular on this podcast, I think. So. I will see you again soon, and I hope you freeze.
Well, that's hurtful. Jeez.
No, not to death. Just so you know a little bit of what it's like to live in England.
Maybe I will go get an ice cream later. That'll be nice.
My blood is boiling, and yet I feel no warmth. Goodbye, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening to Wibbly Wobbly Dicey Wicey. please subscribe and rate us on iTunes. Feel free to get in touch with any questions or suggestions for future episodes, either on Facebook, by email www.rpg@gmail.com, or by Twitter @wwdwrpg.